Buffon, and then Ronaldo! Oh! What a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo!
Messi to the near post! Messi to the net!
Mamma mia! Lionel!
Ramel Kielko now. Here's a Honduran. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! Over Elise! La Pantanita! It's a Honduran connection!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome into Soccer Matters, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. And we are now into 2021 and optimistic about the future. A big thank you, all of you. And first, you got to go out to the people who've been putting it out there on the front lines. You know who you are. We haven't forgotten about you. Thank you for everything you do. Also, to you, the listener, the caller, the poster on Facebook Soccer Matters and on Twitter and all the social media outlets, you keep it alive and in discussion. I'm a huge believer in soccer and the media. We're going to continue to pump out the great content in 2021 and proudly have kept the show with the aid of many on the air for 19 years, believe it or not. I'm not sure there are many 19-year soccer shows that are running in the United States. Also, a big thank you to sponsors, because look, you don't get on the air without them. So our presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, also they handle our show that is over a year old now in Austin. Thank you, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, for your support of soccer, soccer on the radio, and of our podcasts. To Advantage BMW in Midtown, Danish Inspirations, Modern Contemporary Furniture, and Hugh O'Connor's, a big thank you. And to all the other sponsors that have been on the show that maybe aren't here anymore, thank you, because you did your part as well. We're always looking for support to stay on the air. Aaron Raybould, who has been producing as of late, and all the great producers over at ESPN 975 and in Austin, we thank you for that. Victor Ariza, big help to this show, and the amazing Edgar Valise with the Houston Dynamo, we thank you. And all our crazy great guests, also thank you. We've had people from all over the world on this show. We'll continue to bring you the best of guests. All right, let's get started. Best of 2020. It starts now. Andreas, as an Argentine and somebody that has met Maradona so many times and has interviewed him, what does it mean to the Argentine now upon the passing of Diego Armando Maradona?
I think, Glenn, the world of football lost, obviously, the greatest player to many of all time. But for us Argentinians, we lost more than that. You know, he was a superhero to all Argentinians. Whether, you know, you agreed with him on all the extra football stuff that was very controversial around his life or not, we all remembered him fondly for what he did on the pitch. You have to understand that this was a superhero that was very reachable to the masses. I mean, he even gave his home address for people to go watch him out of the balcony. He was in touch with many, many people that needed his help. He was the voice of the poor. He was a very, like I said, a very accessible world superstar. On top of that, you know, he beat England, I wouldn't say single-handedly, but obviously scoring one of the most controversial goals in World Cup history and the most beautiful goal in World Cup history. And both have a special meaning to Argentines. Why? Because that game was fueled by what had happened 4 years early with the Falkland Island War. Don't get me wrong, it was the stupidest war that all Argentines were sent to, but then England came over and almost just threw Argentina off the map. And then it was like the first goal. I mean, I don't think there is one Argentine that will take pride in the way he scored the goal with his hand. But then it was like some type of revenge for what had happened with England in the Falkland Islands War. And then the second goal, obviously, is like the culmination of his craft. It was just pretty much incredible. So, you know, his death is, it's a great loss for Argentina. And he was already, for Argentinians, he was already a myth. And now, you know, he's a myth, legend. I mean, you just add on, tack on all the adjectives and all the words that you can or want to Diego's as we remember him now.
We're talking to the legendary commentator, Andreas Cantor, about Diego Maradona. You know, those two goals so indelibly etched in the minds of people and in, as you mentioned, in the history of the World Cup. In some ways, did they kind of reflect his life? On one hand, they're calling him a bit of a cheat and cunning. And on the other hand, it's just the sheer artistic brilliance.
Yeah, I don't think he was a cheat in life. He never used drugs to enhance his performances. It was very, very clear. And he said it many times. And I believe that was the case, that if he wouldn't have used cocaine for personal use, he would have been a much better player than he was, incredibly. He said that in many, many interviews. And I strongly believe that. There was no one instance where he took advantage. I mean, you know, we all know that cocaine doesn't enhance any athlete's performance, to the contrary. And then in 1994, he got booted out of the World Cup for ephedrine, which you and I probably have taken many
nasal,
times in
nasal
supplements.
Spray.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we have, I pretty, with all the Afrin that I've taken, you know, to clear my sinuses, I probably wouldn't have passed that drug test in 1994 either. So in any case, I think just the second goal illustrates, and it's just, that is, if you have to choose one goal out of all the ones that he has scored or all the plays that he had, great plays throughout his career, obviously the goal, the second goal against England would be it.
Andreas Cantor joining us here, and excited to have him on the program here tonight. This is a great listen here. We're talking about Diego Maradona. Of course, you know Andreas from Telemundo, Football de Primera. Let's just go into how he has been deified. I mean, I've watched all the documentaries. I don't know how a man could live a life like this, honestly, because the amount of pressure, I mean, physically people coming up to him when he walks out of his house and making physical contact. How he has been deified. Is there any accountability for us as humans when it comes to this man's life?
You know, fame comes with a price, I guess, and he was the most famous person in the planet. I have no doubt during his playing days and his best days. In rewatching many interviews that he did, I came upon one from 9 years ago where they asked him, "Do you remember how many interviews have you given in your life?" And he says, "No, I cannot. I mean, hundreds of thousands." So they asked him, "Do you remember when it was the first interview that you did?" And he said, "At around 13 years old," I'm quoting him, he said, "At 13 years old, the press started putting the ice cream cone, as the metaphor for the microphone, in front of my face. And from that day on, I lived every day of my life with cameras and microphones in front of my face everywhere I went." So you can, you know, understand what this man's life or lack of a normal life was when he was in his best playing days, or just his playing days. So, you know, I don't know what part the press we all have, but, you know, he was the most thought after athlete worldwide. I know he, you know, we can talk about Magic, Michael Jordan, them too, you know, but mostly here in the U.S. You have to understand that if you went to every corner of the world, I know it's perhaps, I mean, maybe for people that listen to your show, no, but for other sports enthusiast, you have to understand that if you went, you know, 30 years ago to any corner of the world and you said Michael Jordan, people perhaps didn't know who he was, but you said Diego Maradona and they started talking, you know, 20 minutes with you about all his goals and his plays and Argentina and Napoli and this and that.
Talking to the great Andreas Cantor, let's go to the footballing side of it now, because I mean, even in that England quarterfinal, I'm watching that and he's just on another stratosphere than everybody on that field, including Glenn Hoddle of England, who was supposed to be their most technical player. His teammate Jorge Valdano once said, quote, "The football was the toy of his life." Is who compares to him when it comes with the football being a part of somebody? That to me, just the way his body is relaxed, even if you just go and juggle a soccer ball, I never saw a guy, maybe Cruyff, maybe Pelé, that just seemed at one with the football.
Yeah, he was something else. I don't think it's good to enter into comparing him to anybody else. He was just, you know, a genius all by himself, as, you know, Pelé was in his time and Johan was in his, and Messi is now. All I have to add, because, you know, we live in a world where kids grow up watching football, soccer games on their cell phones, and they're watching today's VAR soccer, that Maradona played in an era where soccer was very different. You know, they allowed much more physicality in the rules. He was butchered game in, game out. He was hit left and right, and he always had that enormous capacity to get up and just keep playing. Furthermore, he played, you know how today, I mean, I think there is such, I think the FIFA EA games is so popular because it resembles to the kids, it resembles the game they see on TV, you know, very nice manicured pitch, very fast moving ball. The players are even, I mean, I don't know if the electronic game resembles the players or the players resemble the electronic games. Diego played in an era where, you know, the fields of play were not that good and controlling the ball was like almost impossible. Gary Lineker, in remembering his death the other day, said Estadio Azteca in that game against England had patches of grass where you set foot on one patch and then you had to step on the other one and it was so uneven and this was the only guy that could control the ball. And if you see carefully the second goal, you know, the 60-meter dash to the goal, the ball looks like a rabbit. It's not, I mean, even though he had it almost glued to his feet, I mean, if you watch today's, you know, any Champions League game or any game anywhere around the world, the pitches are more playable and it makes it easier for the players to control the football. And that was Maradona. Maradona played in that time, so that is why I think he was just the greatest of all time.
He's Andreas Cantor. He's one of the greatest of all time behind the microphone when it comes to the global game of soccer. You've interviewed him and been around him. You mentioned to me before the interview about 10 times. Tell me something maybe that came out of those meetings with him that the general public might not know about him.
Well, I met him the first time in Los Angeles when he came with a youth national team that was on the way to Japan to win the Youth World Cup. I always tell the story. I was already working for a Grafico magazine, which was like the Sports Illustrated of the time.
Well, you know something? I couldn't read or understand Spanish, but the cover of that magazine was always unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah, it was like the soccer Bible to all Latin American journalism and to all Latin American soccer fans. And I had the idea, because I had covered many boxing fights in Vegas. I was 17. I believe I was still in high school, perhaps in my first year at USC, but I can't remember. I would have to look at the calendar. I had the idea of getting him together with Muhammad Ali that lived in LA. I had a contact of him through all the times I went to Vegas to cover fights. And we got to his home because, obviously, of what we just discussed. I picked him up in the hotel. There was lots of press, even though it was Los Angeles in the late 70s. And, you know, he got out of the elevator and boom, they, you know, he couldn't move. And we got to Muhammad Ali's home like 15 minutes late and he was gone. And I missed, you know, talking about the cover. That was going to be the cover of a graphic or magazine for sure. And I remember his face. You know, he was 18, I believe. And I was 16 and a half because, you know, he's almost 2 years and 2 months older than I am. And I remember his face. I will never forget. It was, you know, the kid that just lost his favorite toy. And he was, you know, bummed. And then in all the times, I mean, I met him as a youth player. I was fortunate enough to be with him both times he won the Scudetto in Napoli. I was there. I was there in the celebration party. I was there in Argentina, in Mexico, when Argentina won the World Cup. And now, retrospectively, because, you know, you live through things that you don't realize until, you know, you take a look back in life. He was the world's superstar. And he was the most humble human being, even though in the peak of stardom, even though he had put Naples in the map of Italy with his soccer, even though he had won the World Cup away in Mexico for Argentina after scoring, you know, all five goals. I mean, the Belgium goals were awesome. And he was just, all I can tell you from all the encounters I had with him, that he was the most simple, human, relatable human being that there could be.
All right, break time here on Soccer Matters. As we roll to break here, a big thank you to Advantage BMW Midtown. Well, my friends down there have put me in a vehicle I've leased. I've bought from Advantage BMW Midtown numerous times. Love the drive of a BMW. It's like no other. I've got an X5 now. Love it. I do know why they call it the ultimate driving machine. And as I've mentioned many times before, incredible 23-hour drive to New Jersey to see my parents through all the beautiful states. Going eastward towards the Garden State. The other thing I love at Advantage BMW Midtown is the customer service, second to none. Advantage BMW Midtown will cover you. Sales, service, finance, it can be done easy. Getting a 3, 5, 7 if you like sedans. Advantage BMW Midtown. Get that Houston hometown advantage. That's why I shop Advantage. Advantage BMW in Midtown. AdvantageBMWHouston.com. Proud sponsors of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. We'll take a break, then we'll roll on.
I'm Jordi Sunyer in Barcelona, and you're listening to Soccer Matters.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Big shout out to my friend Jan Christensen, Danish Inspirations, Modern Contemporary Furniture on Fondren. A big thank you for their support of this show, and they've got all kinds of great modern contemporary furniture over there on Fondren. Get over there to Danish Inspirations, Modern Contemporary Furniture. They carry Stressless as well. Tremendous selection. Also, our presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. No telling where Soccer on the Radio in Houston would be without John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Again, 713-322-HURT, John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. All right, let's keep it going tonight here on ESPN 97.5. All right, part two now of the great commentator of Telemundo and Football de Primera, Andreas Cantor.
How long will the nostalgia go on for him? I mean, he's going to live eternally. I mean, that's what Argentines say.
Yeah.
The you know, 30, 40 years from now, will people be still talking about the great Diego Maradona?
I believe so. I believe that there will be a reference point like there is always, you know, in every sport about the great athletes of their time. Obviously, there will be always be a reference to Diego. You know, the passing of the torch, I don't know. We will see if, you know, Messi can come up in his last hurrah in Qatar if Argentina makes it and win the World Cup. But undoubtedly, I think things will change once the generation, my, gener- this sounds awful what I'm going to say, but once my generation is gone, and the generations that live after us will only have the reference of him in the YouTube videos, and anything that, I mean, let's say my son, who is 27, you know, he didn't see him play. He was born in 1993. But yet he has, you know, an adoration for him, and him being in soccer and in broadcasting as well. He fully understands who he was. But, I mean, he can only relate to what he meant through me. So I'm not sure that, you know, he will be able to pass those feelings to his sons, because it's something that, you know, he inherited from me without him being part of it. I was part of Maradona's life in soccer, and I was able to tell him what I saw, what he meant for the game, what he meant for Argentina. And then, you know, there's the support of the YouTube videos that everyone can watch. But then when, you know, my generation is long gone, you know, he will be remembered just simply as the greatest footballer or one of the greatest footballers. But undoubtedly, he has left a mark in the football world.
I take you back to the line between the on-field football, which was utter artistry, brilliance. We've talked about that. We all know that. All we have to do is look. But then you get across that line into the personal life and all that. Is that side of it kind of pushed aside maybe by a lot of Argentines? They don't want to really think about that. They just focus on what he did football-wise and how he put Argentina on the map with the 86 World Cup. And then, of course, as you mentioned, the success at Napoli.
I think what he did for Argentina as our captain, as our greatest player, as our myth and legend, was stronger than whatever he thought, said, and did in his personal life. Not everyone, and I will be the first one to tell you that I probably agree with very little of the things that he did and the way he, you know, he approached different causes that he thought were just, and I wasn't fully a friend of his friends, metaphorically, obviously. I don't know Fidel Castro, and I don't know Maduro. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But at the end, who are we to judge? I mean, you know, this is like the great divide here in our last election. I'm not going to tell you who I voted for, but, you know, we grew up in this country with respect. Respect for each other's point of view and political views. And am I going to be less friendly to you because you voted for candidate A and I voted for candidate B? No. I respect your opinion. I don't share it. I seldomly shared many of his latest opinions in life. And I think that is a reflection. I cannot generalize because there were lots of Argentinians very hurt by some of his actions. All I can say is that he was an indomitable lion, really. And all I can say is that if, you know, the people that surrounded him would have really helped him, he would be alive today. But he was, like, very, very hard to tame. You know, he didn't seek advice. He didn't accept advice. It was tough. So, you know, whatever he did with his personal life as a human being and whatever beliefs he had that were contrary to mine, you know, so be it. They were his. I don't share in them. But, you know, I remember Diego, the player, and respect the man for being so strong about his beliefs, whether I like them or not.
He was a problem solver on the soccer field. We know that. He was the indomitable lion you just mentioned. I wonder why that couldn't translate into life when seeking out help for some of the other problems, because it always seems, from what I've read, that he was determined to solve problems himself and not with the help of others.
Right, right. I think it's you know, he said it in one of the many interviews. I mean, nobody knows what it is to be in the life of Diego Maradona. And I cannot imagine, you know, today's, I mean, we, your listeners have to understand that it was a different era as well in terms of the approach of the world's megastar. I mean, all we have to do is watch the Jordan documentary, you know, the Last Dance. When I think NBA still is even more flex than soccer, where, you know, you could go inside the locker room and see the Michael Jordan naked getting out of the shower and then boom, you throw the microphones at him. I don't know if that happens today. Certainly it doesn't happen in FIFA, in the World Cups or in any other game. You cannot go inside. I mean, here in the MLS, I think you can, but in the rest of the world, you can't go inside the locker room. Superstars are much more protected. And Diego wasn't. Diego, like, you know, he said that in that interview, since he was 13 or 14, he had press all around him. And he couldn't go out, you know, for a walk in Buenos Aires, in Barcelona, in Naples. The only place where he could probably go out for a walk without, you know, being swamped was here in the U.S., where he came, you know, at a very early age and then never returned. So I don't know what, you know, type of life that is. So I think he, you know, he wanted to manage it, his life, the way he thought, you know, he could manage it. And unfortunately, he did not listen to the people that wanted good for him and that wanted him to do things that he didn't want to do. And like I said, you know, it was very, very hard to tame and did things his own way.
Andreas, all I can say is thank you very much for coming on. I know these are a lot of personal moments for you and Argentines now, and of course the world of soccer. To all of us, I think we feel very kind of gray and dark now that we've lost such an icon that we have enjoyed watching play this game in a way that we've never seen before. Thank you very much for coming on. I also want to congratulate you because I want my listeners to know that you're going to come back on. We're going to talk broadcasting and your career more in depth. But I want to congratulate you for the Colin Jose Award, which is given here in the United States to people that have just committed so much to journalism and sport and what you've done for the sport of soccer in this country. I think you have to understand it's more than just calling games. You've helped grow the game in this country. And I think a lot of people like myself on the outside obviously recognize that.
Thank you, Glenn. You're very generous. I mean, it got me off guard, and they surprised me with the announcement on air just to be in the National Hall of Fame in this country that I love so much, and after so many years of fighting and still fighting to position the game in the place it deserves, it's just an absolute honor, and thank you for your kind words. And anytime you want to talk about anything in the world of soccer, you have a friend.
Comes right back at you, Andreas. Thank you so much for coming on tonight. We appreciate it immensely, and I know my listeners enjoyed that interview immensely also.
Time for another break on Soccer Matters, again presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. Any kind of accident you get into, you want the representation that you deserve and need. It's John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, 713-322-HURT, DaspitLaw.com. Again, 713-322-HURT. They are bilingual, and they are proud sponsors of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Also, Hugh O'Connor, 7620 Katy Freeway in the Marquee Entertainment Center, Liverpool supporters group heads over there. Go in there, say hello to our good friend Peter Kingston. 18 TVs, big screens, and again, all the Premier League matches and soccer matches from around the world. It's not just for the Liverpool supporters group, although it is their home. All right, we will take a break. We will continue to roll on.
Hi, this is Oliver Luck, and you're listening to Soccer Matters on 97.5 with the irrepressible Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Here's where you can find me. Facebook, Soccer Matters. Twitter, Glenn Davis Soc. Instagram, Glenn Davis Soc, S-O-C. And GlennDavisSoccer.com. As always, the show is presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. A big thank you to John and his firm. We really appreciate their support of soccer. They're personal injury attorneys. John and his firm, they'll cover you. Accidents, whether it's car, boat, motorcycle. You might drive an 18-wheeler, refinery, construction. Daspit Law Firm, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. And, well,
We appreciate them keeping us on the air and bringing you the best in soccer talk here in Houston consistently for years. All right, let's roll on with the show. Anthony Hudson, the under 20 national team coach, going to join us now. Anthony is 39 years of age. You remember him at the Colorado Rapids, has also coached New Zealand and Bahrain, and of course is also the son of the legendary Seattle Sounder, Alan Hudson, who people will remember from Chelsea, Stoke, and Arsenal as well. And he joins us now. Anthony, thank you very much for coming on the program.
Glenn, good evening. It's good to speak to you.
It's great to have you on, and I like that you got dressed for the occasion. Unlike me, you look very good in the U.S. top. So you and I had a little conversation before we got on the air just about the amazing growth of the sport in this country. Care to comment on that?
Yeah, I think it's interesting for me because I was here in my early coaching career. I actually started my coaching career in the USL when I was 24, 25. And then I left. And as you mentioned there, I've been to New Zealand and Bahrain, actually coached for a few years back in England. And then I've obviously returned. And to see the growth since I've been away and come back is incredible. And we talked about a few teams, the Atlantas, the Seattle Sounders, LAFCs, these teams. I mean, it's very, very evident that the game is going in one direction here, and it's amazing to see.
All right, so just take my listeners through, you know, how you got the under 20 job. You were at the Rapids. We'll talk a little MLS as we go along in this interview, but how did you get the under 20 job?
Yeah, I had a couple of interviews with Ernie and a few of the staff at US Soccer. I obviously had known Greg through playing against Columbus, and then when I left Colorado, I went and met with Greg a few times. Greg's someone that, you know, I have a huge amount of respect for. There's a few coaches in MLS that you know, I've just really respect and admire. Greg's one of them. You know, people like Peter Vermees, even you know, the sort of legend that I took over from Tab. You know, there's some really big coaches here that I really respect, and Greg's one of them. So when I left Colorado, and I was fortunate enough to be local to Chicago, and I was able to come and see Greg quite regularly and just talk soccer and talk coaching and methods and these types of things. And Greg's very open with things like that. And then obviously the job came up, interview, and then I was very pleased that I was offered the job and went straight into a camp in January.
And you've had a tremendous amount of international experience already. You've worked with under 23 teams in New Zealand. The connection between you and Greg, I'll lead you into that now. That was something I was going to wait till later. But the connection between you and Greg in the under 20s to the full national team, tactically and through all these other ideas, how heavily linked is that?
Yeah, I think one of the big things that the Federation wants, and one thing I agree with and believe in because of my time, not just with New Zealand, but even at Bahrain, because I actually started with the Olympic team in Bahrain and then went to the first team. So I really see the value, and especially when you have small nations like that where you don't have a big player pool, I think it's really important that you have to look at your youth. You have to, you know, give them a pathway, a really clear pathway, and not just a pathway. You've got to help them be successful when they get there. And I think the biggest thing for that is alignment. So, you know, alignment's key. And I think what that looks like with us here, which has been amazing for me, I've loved it. I've really enjoyed up to now sort of my involvement in that and Greg really leading the way. We have, you know, two really intensive meetings every week, and I'm talking about intensive, you know, hours and hours worth of analysis, covering the whole player group, not just on the men's team, but the, you know, on the youth side. I present players on the youth side to Greg and the first team, and then we obviously have many discussions in between that. So I think we're all on the same page in terms of scouting. And then when it comes to style of play, you know, all we're doing is talking about style of play and philosophy and trends in the game and studying best practice, looking what works best for us. And I think, and I really do believe as well, I think my responsibility as the under 20 coach is to get as many of our young players in the first team as possible. And there's two things for that. For these guys to get there and stay there, first of all, when they get there, they need to understand the style of play. They need to understand the principles. They need to, you know, because you see this camp that's just happened now. I mean, they probably only had two real training sessions before the first game. I mean, it's unbelievable, really. So if you're a young kid going into that environment and you've got two training sessions, let's just say over the course of it, you've got maybe 40 minutes in really specific exercises to show the coach that you can trust it. You can trust me. Well, for him to be able to be successful, we need to be following the same way in terms of principles. And then also, off the field, on and off the field, behavior, culture. This is what we want to look like. This is who we want to stand for. So that's the relationship. And so far, I've really enjoyed it. I've learned a lot, and it's been a really good experience so far.
How about some of your thoughts on some of the players that you worked with in the 6-2 win over Panama? I think Sebastian Soto, right? Yes. Richie Ledesma, are those some of the ones you've worked with? Or
yeah, to be fair, a lot of the guys in the 20s that were in this camp, like Uli Yanez, these guys, even Big C, who you didn't see him, he's the goalkeeper who's at Leicester City, who's a real high potential. You know, he could be a top goalkeeper. You know, he's been training with the first team at Leicester this season. He's only 17. So when we had a camp in January alongside the first team, and a lot of our 20s were in the first team in that camp as well. And they're just really exciting players. You know, I think, you know, when we get to Touchwood, when we get to the qualifiers and the World Cup, you know, hopefully we can get some of those guys back and playing for the 20s. Because I think if we do, we'd have a really exciting team. But look, the key thing is that these guys are pushing into the first team and getting experience there, which is really, really important.
All right. So when it comes to that moment where you got to kind of lobby a little to get a couple of these guys to help you in an under 20 World Cup, how does that work? I mean, I know you've gone through that in the past, probably with the under 23s in New Zealand and others. You know, how does that work? Obviously, I understand it's very respectful, but, you know, how does that decision ultimately get made, whether somebody drops back down to help one of the younger youth national teams?
I think it's all about communication and we speak a lot. You know, we have a lot of communication within the staff. You know, I said, you know, prior to this, you know, twice a week we have really, really intensive meetings, you know, 5-6 hour meetings where we cover all the players and we talk about the players. And I think what comes out of that is just really seeing where players fit best in terms of their own development. So to answer your question, I think when it comes down to it is what is the what's happening at that time in that window. You know, if there's a Gold Cup, if there's qualifiers, and you know, they may take priority. You know, it's all, you know, so that's the starting point. You know, what's going on at that moment? Maybe the 23s have got their qualifiers for the Olympics, and we have a friendly window, or the priority would be the 23s, for example. And then it comes down to what's best for the player and his development. You know, is it best for him to go and sit on a bench for the first team? Maybe it is, and be around the first team. Is it best for him to come and play in a big tournament? Maybe that is the best. And I think these are just conversations that are going to be ongoing. And I think it comes down to alignment again. You know, we're all, especially, and this pandemic, one of the positives that's come from it is the fact that we've spent so much time together discussing all of this, because we've had to, because of the situation. I think what's come out of that is we're all pretty much on the same page and looking at the same things in the right way.
Talking to Anthony Hutton, the under 20 U.S. national team coach. And the reason I asked that about the under 20 World Cup, because that's a coveted title. I mean, the U.S. soccer wants to win that. It's the second biggest FIFA event, arguably. And that's something that's a feather in the cap of a country, winning an under 20 World Cup. I mean, I know it's not the big World Cup, but it is still something that you guys want to win.
Yeah. And I think if you look at the previous winners of those World Cups, you know, the teams that have won, I mean, if you look at, we look at Vlatko, who's with, so Panovic, who was with Chicago Fire, and prior winning it with Serbia. Yep. Now, if you look at a lot of the teams that win it, the players that end up going on to playing at a really, really high level. And I think what's important is, you know, going through that, when you have a good crop of players and going through a tournament like that, and you're able to have success, and you're able to beat teams that you're familiar with, that, you know, big teams, I think that only translates to the senior team. You know, it does. That mentality, that understanding of how to win game tournament soccer, and to, you know, winning qualifiers, that's really, really important for the first team when they step up.
Anthony, let me just talk to you about your father, because he's a guy I watched at Giants Stadium in the Meadowlands, and, you know, was a legendary player at places like Chelsea, Stoke, and Arsenal, Seattle Sounders. How much of an influence? I mean, we know the father-son relationship when it comes to so much is influential. Tell me about that with your father, Alan, and the sport of soccer.
Well, it's interesting because I was born in Seattle, and but as you can tell from my accent, I grew up in England. So my dad was there for a few years, and he played in Seattle. And where I grew up, listening to my dad tell me how much he loved it out here, he truly did. He loved his life in Seattle, and I think he just loved. I heard so many stories about the game back then, on and off the field. But it was like it was such an amazing part of his life, and so I always grew up, you know, really intrigued by soccer out here. But yeah, he was an incredible player. As a kid, and this is no joke, I used to carry around an old VHS tape of his debut game against West Germany when he played for England, and he was man of the match at Wembley against the current world champions. And I've never seen a debut like it. And I think I'm honest enough not to be biased, but this truly was an incredible debut. I mean, he ran the game. I can hear the commentator, you know, one of those old English style commentators, just constantly saying my dad's name, and he just controlled the game, and I was so proud of him. You know, even times as, you know, part of my life I lived in Stoke, and he played for Stoke City. And if anyone has the opportunity to go and see a live game at Stoke City, the fans there, the atmosphere is incredible. But there were times as a kid where people, I'd bump into fans and they would know my dad was Alan Hudson. And they would come to me. I remember this older gentleman one day coming up to me, and he thanked me, and then he started crying, and he said, "You don't realize how much joy your dad's given to our city." And it was like, and then you just really growing up, you understand the power and the effect the game can have on people's lives, and it's more than just a game. It really is. And so I grew up with a lot of pride, and very, very, you know, grateful to be exposed to that lifestyle.
Thank you for sharing that story. That's a special one right there. That's remarkable in its own way. All right, we're talking to Anthony Hudson, U.S. Under 20 national team coach. All right, so you took over for Tab Ramos. Now, Tab is in our market now, and he's moving the Houston Dynamo forward here. How much did you talk with Tab once you got the job? Because, you know, he's just such an authentic guy when it comes to talking football. And you can, speaking of passion, you can tell when he talks about the game, it's priority.
Yeah, I mean, look, Tab's done amazing things in the game out here as a player, as a coach. His record for the 20s, what he's done for the 20s is quite incredible. And I think you see, you know, we're talking about a lot of the young players coming through now and how well the young players are doing in the game. Tab has a big part to play in that. So it's a real privilege to be taken over from him. I know we had a conversation and I had loads of questions for him, and he was very gracious and very open and honest. And then the season started, and what you want to try and do is just leave coaches alone until the season finishes, unless you're talking about certain players. So, yeah, we had a really good lengthy conversation, and he was really, really helpful to me. And then what you tend to do, you tend to kind of build relationships with coaches where they have more of your players, or, you know, in the league, in MLS especially. So, but yeah, now the season's finished, I plan to renewing that conversation and getting back in touch.
Well, he may have had a few questions for you about Major League Soccer. It could work both ways, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Speaking of Anthony Hudson, under 20 coach for the U.S. national team. All right, I grant you one wish when it comes to player development in the United States. Something you could improve or add to or eliminate, whatever it is, what would it be for Anthony Hudson?
Well, Glenn, that's a tough one, because I think this is a contextual question and answer, because right now my only desire is for us to get the team together as much as we can, and to get the stadiums filled, to get money coming back in the game through fans, through TV, through sponsors, through everything, to get that enthusiasm that was there prior to the pandemic. Because when it comes to youth development and young players coming through, you really can't be. And I'll tell you a story about when I was living in Stoke, and I talked about the fans there. Any coach could have told me whatever they wanted to growing up. But standing in a stadium and listening to a crowd, a loud crowd, a full stadium, and watching your heroes kick a ball around on the field and play a game and win and score a late goal, and the crowd going wild, that is far more valuable to any young player than what any coach, I believe, can tell you. So my biggest wish is for those times to come back quickly, because I think it's so important, because players dream about being on the field and playing in front of those fans, big stadiums and all that. And that's what motivates you and drives you. So that's me. And then obviously to get the team together as much as we can, because I'm desperate to get them together and work with this really exciting group. And start looking at the under 20 World Cup.
Real quick, when's the next time you expect or hope to get them together, the under 20s?
I'm hoping soon, because things are a lot more positive now. As you know, we've had some great news about the vaccine, and we see how that plays out. The first team, the men and the women, have had successful camps now. You know, from a safety and a health and safety point of view, which was a big issue. It's a challenge for international teams, more so than club teams. So there's been success there. So I think everyone's a lot more positive now. So I think now what we need to do is just carefully plan around when our qualifiers are. And then start looking at our camps. But it's going to be soon, for sure. It's going to be soon. Trust me, I'm desperate.
Yeah, I can tell. You're probably zoomed out. We appreciate we appreciate you coming on tonight, Anthony. This is great stuff. My listeners will appreciate it as well. I want to wish you the best of luck with the under-20 national team and getting back on those fields soon.
Thanks, Glenn. Have a great evening.
All right, that's Anthony Hutson, the under-20 national team coach. All right, break time here on Soccer Matters. We'll take a break, then we'll roll on.